Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Welcome to Is This Real Life? A Bravo podcast that relates our favorite shows to our own lives and the world around us. I'm your host, Mandy Slutsker. Let's get to it. Hi, everyone. I hope you had a wonderful week. My week started out a little rough. And I've been debating whether or not to talk about it on this platform. And I decided over the last couple of days, I'm just going to do it regardless of what the response is to me. You guys know that I make this podcast about nuance, about life in the gray, not in just the black and white, and looking at things from different perspectives and changing our mind on things when we are presented with new information. And just in general, just being kind and empathetic towards those people that we watch on TV and towards each other. I'm always blown away by all of your insights and thoughts and how kind you can be when calling me out when I say something wrong or make a mistake or get information incorrect. I always appreciate and learn from all of you. And we have a lot of laughs and we share memes and it's a good time. And so I assume the people who follow me and who listen to this podcast do it because they like listening to it and because they appreciate nuance. And this week, I received some hate that was so shocking that it really rocked the foundation of everything for me and made me question who it is I've cultivated to follow me. And so I'm going to share this experience and how it made me feel and just speak from my heart, and hopefully you guys will listen. If not, just keep skipping ahead till we get to my amazing guest, Nimade. So I posted last weekend about a sign that I saw at my alma mater, the George Washington University, that was very hurtful and anti-Semitic as part of the ongoing protest against the Gaza war. Now, let me make it very clear. I have no problem with people protesting a war. The problem was with the anti-Semitism that it came with. And there was a poster about Israelis and Jews going back to Europe or the U.S., quote unquote, their real homes. And not only is it anti-Semitic, it's incredibly ignorant because most Israelis don't even have any ties to Europe. Most of them are from the Middle East and North Africa. But for the rest of us, the Ashkenazi Jews who do have a background in Europe, you know, we were never made to be at home there. And the story of us in Europe is one of constant oppression and persecution. And you know, I just posted it sharing how hurt I found this. And most of you, you know, are like, wow, that's awful. You know, whatever, you know, scroll along, go along your day. But, you know, some of you didn't like it and decided to stop following me. And that's fine. People should follow who brings them joy and who they, you know, want to hear more from. But I had a few people reach out with hate and sent very anti-Semitic DMs. And that's just something I hadn't experienced since opening up about my Jewish ancestry on this podcast, and it rocked me to my core. These messages invoked Jews as being the real Nazis, and, you know, I'm just plain victim, and I'm silent about what's happening in Gaza, and just terrible, awful things about Jews in general. And then when I did respond, because I'm an idiot, I was like, maybe this person wants to engage with me. And I said, oh, I'm not very public about it, but I actually work on this issue. It's new to me. It's a new portfolio area, but I've been working specifically on children in humanitarian settings and what's happening with Gaza, and been doing advocacy with USAID and trying to get funding for humanitarian aid and all these things. And this person just was like, I don't see that on your page. You're not posting links to different websites with education, and you don't have a watermelon emoji, and you don't, you know, just all this stuff, like you don't really care. And then started sending me pictures of dead Palestinian children's bodies. I mean, absolutely awful stuff. Hopefully you all know me well enough to know that I care very deeply about what's happening, and that I, in general, am trying not to focus too much in this podcast as a platform talking about all the things happening in the world, because we use this, and I use this podcast as an escape. The rest of my life is surrounded about what's happening in the news, and I don't even get to get away from it when I'm at work. It is my work. It's so painful, and to be told these nasty things by people who I thought cared about the podcast and about me was just very shocking and very hurtful. And a couple of my podcast friends, when I opened up to them about it, said, well, you know, people hate listen. And I actually did not know that. I didn't know that was a thing. So if any of you listening don't like me, don't enjoy this podcast, and are listening just to get riled up and angry and to post mean things about me, please, please, turn this podcast off. I don't want you. This is not good. It's like crazy. Why spend time listening to something that you don't enjoy? Anyways, I'm just coming to you because I've just been very hurt, and I am trying to figure out how much of my life and of my heart I'm going to actually share on the podcast, on my Instagram, because I don't want to get this nasty blowback that then makes me feel like the world is meaner and crueler than it really is, and that people are awful rather than just complicated. So anyways, I don't know where I'm going with this. It's just been very difficult for me, and it was really hard to pull everything together to put a podcast together this week. But I did, because I love you guys. Most of you, I guess. And because I love these shows, and these shows are what get me through tough things. I had been watching Bravo, but it really came to me when my mom died, and a couple weeks prior to that, my apartment burned down. I was doing really poorly, and the only thing that could get me through the day was watching Andy Cohen on Watch What Happens Live and Vanderpump Rules. And so I find that many of you have come to these shows in dark times also, and the world is having a very dark moment. And so if you're able to find levity through these shows and to enjoy them, please do. Don't let anyone make you feel bad for it. I do want to share just very briefly about why the Europe comment was just so hurtful to me in particular, because I have talked to you guys about my family history. Let's talk about my dad's side more specifically. So I am named after my great aunt, whose name was Manya Slutsker. My mom, fun fact, wanted to name me Manya, and my dad said no because it was too ethnic, like ethnic of his own ethnicity. He didn't want a Russian name or a Jewish Russian name for an American girl. He wanted us to be American, to be proud of our country, because he was not proud of where he came from. And Manya was 12 years old in the summer of 1942 when she went to go visit her bubby, her grandmother, Babushka, at a dacha in what is now, I guess, considered Western Ukraine. And she never came home. Her and her grandmother were murdered by the Einsatzgruppen, which is an SS paramilitary death squad of Nazi Germany that was responsible for mass murder, primarily by shooting during World War II in German-occupied Europe. So during that summer, Nazi Germany had taken over that part of Ukraine, and that's when they were both murdered. So Manya's brother, my grandfather, my Zadie Vova, fought in the Red Army during World War II, and he survived. He later married my bubby, Fania. They had two children, one of which was my father. And during this time, Russia had come down harder on Jews. They had banned our language, our culture, our religion. My dad had never learned Yiddish, which was the language of his grandmother. You know, they had to always communicate in Russian. It was interesting when him and his parents and his grandmother came to the United States and he met my mom and her parents met his parents and her grandma met my dad's grandma. There was a lot of communication issues because one side spoke English and another spoke Russian, but the grandmas, the bubbies, they could communicate because they both spoke Yiddish. They just came over at different times. And my dad's bubby, his babushka, she used to, during the spring, have the family go in a closet and she would do some prayers and they would have wine and it was all confusing to my dad. He didn't know what was happening, but she was trying to hold a Seder. And my dad was told never, ever to speak about it to anyone. And so he never did. And then one spring in 1981, he'd been dating my mom. They had gotten engaged. He was invited to her family's Seder. And he put together that that is what his grandma had been doing in the closet for all those years. She would even try and keep Shabbat and light the candles in the closet. And so the story of the Jewish people is one of resilience, but it is also one of persecution. And it's one of a lot of anxiety because always fearing, well, we don't want to get too comfortable in the place that we are because we know we're going to have to leave soon. Because at some point they're going to turn on us and we will have to run away again. I did have a therapist tell me at one point because I was trying to figure out why I had generalized anxiety disorder. It was something I was diagnosed with as a kid. I said, I didn't really have a difficult childhood. I'm not entirely sure where this is coming from. It makes no sense to me. And she said, well, epigenetics is a real thing. And, you know, when people undergo trauma and consistent, pervasive, toxic stress, it can change their DNA and then they pass it on. And you don't even have to go back just one generation and you've got people in your family fleeing for their life. And so your fight or flight is elevated because people in your family always had to run. And I feel that fight or flight happening these days with all of the anti-Semitism that has been happening. And getting those messages from, you know, it was just a handful of people really just very deeply impacted me. So not sure what to say about that or any lessons or anything like that. It's just, I guess, thank you for listening to me. Thank you for hearing me. And my only plea to all of you is just to be kinder to each other, to be more open, to listen more and talk less, which is, trust me, I understand the irony is that I'm sitting here with a microphone talking at you and I'm saying, listen more, talk less. I get it. But in general, it's just something we all need to learn more from one another and be open to each other and not to just so harshly make generalizations, whether people look differently than us, practice a different religion, have a different race, have a different ethnicity, you know, vote differently. We just need to be more focused on our shared humanity and honor that in each other. Well, thank you for listening to that. I didn't mean to speak for 13 minutes straight. But thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. So back to Bravo. Okay. I'm so excited for my podcast guest this week, Nimade Bewu. She is so fun. We talk all things Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, a little Vanderpump Rules, and some of the Valley. And I joked that Dr. Heavenly needs to step aside because I think Nimade is a relationship expert. And she just, it's so interesting to hear all of her thoughts on all of these relationship dynamics we are watching on a number of the shows. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, give it a 5-star rating and leave a kind review. And if you don't enjoy the podcast, now would be a good time to turn it off. As always, you can reach out to me at Mandy Slutsker on Instagram, but, you know, be kind because it's been rough and I've been trying to avoid social media for a little bit, but I'm back. All right, we'll take a quick break and then back with Nimade.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hi, everyone. I am with Nimade Bewu. She is That African Butterfly on social media. She's also an entrepreneur, freelance writer, facilitator, mental health advocate. The list goes on. I'm so excited to have her with me to chat all things Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, Vanderpump, and The Valley. How are you doing today?
Hello. I am good. I'm so excited to be back. I feel like it's been forever since we talked. Well, I slide in your DMs with my opinions, but it's been a while since we chatted, so I'm really excited.
I am too. So you were sharing some opinions about Summer House, and I was like, come on my podcast and just tell me what you have to say, because I am loving the season. I feel like it's bringing out so many opinions in people and making them kind of look at themselves, their own relationships, how they kind of move in the world. And I think that's actually a really positive thing for the viewers, because I'm really hoping that everything going on with Carl and Lindsay is teaching people a lesson in communication and, you know, leaving when something doesn't seem right, those kinds of things. What are your overall thoughts on this season before we get into some specifics?
Well, overall, I'm loving it. I feel like it feels like the Summer House of yesteryears, right? Like where there's some drama, but there's lots of laughter. And they feel like they're actually like a friend group coming together on the weekends to hang out. Because sometimes it hasn't always felt that. Sometimes it's felt like, oh, they're cast members forced to hang out on the weekend. But like this feels like true friendship group, even when they're not all like getting along specifically. So I'm really enjoying that. And like you said, the Carl and Lindsay thing, it's very interesting. It's always interesting to look at a situation when you know the fallout of it.
Yeah.
Kind of like with Scandal, it changes your perception and like what you're looking for, your signs and your clues. And I also love like the juxtaposition between like them and Craig and Paige, especially when you have like Danielle saying you're giving nothing. And people, I try not to get too into the comments arguing with people, but like people will be like, oh, they're giving each other nothing, or like, oh, they don't know what they want, and oh, they're not jumping to marriage and kids. And I'm like, well, look at what jumping to marriage and kids did to this other couple. Like, they are, what we're watching with Craig and Paige is a couple with great communication. Yes. And I feel like people aren't used to seeing that. People like really communicating and really talking out like where they're going, what they're doing, really figuring stuff out. And we're used to seeing people like say, I love you, and jump to the next step. So people are very uncomfortable with their relationship, whereas I think they have like a super healthy, from what we can see, relationship.
Yeah, it seems super healthy. I just feel a little bit bad for Craig because he is changing what he wants based on her, which is very common in relationships and often a really positive thing, you know, to kind of meet in the middle. But I'm hoping that she at least realizes that you don't have to have everything figured out in terms of timeline. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on timelines. And I understand, right? Like, you know, people's biological clocks, things like that. But when you get so focused on the timeline, you're not making sure that you're doing the right thing for yourself, for your partner, for your relationship. And we saw that on The Valley this week, too, with Jax and Brittany, where she's like, but you said we would start trying this summer to have a second kid. And she just can't get it out of her head that maybe that timeline doesn't work anymore. You know, and Lindsay is just, we cannot change the date of our wedding. We cannot, you know, it's so focused on the event itself. And the relationship seems to not be moving in the way it should.
Yeah. Well, don't you think that, so I feel like they're kind of like the opposite, like when we look at Craig and Paige.
Yeah.
Like, poor Craigie, he's the woman in the relationship, but the woman, quote unquote, in this situation as far as like pushing a timeline. But I feel like I like that he's still being respectful of her needing more time, but he's still communicating that, like, listen, this is like, I want kids by 40. And it's not like he's giving an ultimatum. He's telling her his boundaries and like what he needs and letting her do with that information what she will.
Yeah, no, it's great. And she's telling him, listen, like, I know it's with you. I want to be with you. I just am not sure about a specific timeline.
Yeah. I personally hope they figure it out, because I do think that they, again, from what we can see, because you never know, they do appear to have a good relationship. And so I hope that they sort of figure it out and that she gives a little bit. And I think she will. Like, I do think she, and I do have to say, even though Danielle's driving me crazy, I do think that when she says that you give him nothing, I don't think she meant in the sense of like, do nothing for him, love him. I think she meant in the sense of like, you are very you, right? Like, you are, like, you're not bending or wavering in anything. Like, you are blinders on. This is what I want. This is how I feel. And take it or leave it, which there's nothing wrong with that. But she's, when she says like, you're giving him nothing, I think that that's what she means. Like, she's not compromising or doing anything. And I don't think that's true, but I do think that's how she meant it. I think everyone kind of took it a different way, but I think she meant it as in like, you're rigid in your stance and you're whatever, and you're giving him nothing because it has to be your way or the highway.
Yeah. I wish she was able to expand on it a bit more. Now, a lot of people have been saying, you know, in the beginning of the season, now we all know why they broke up. Look at how horrible Lindsay was. But now the tides are turning a bit. And I think we're seeing some of the mistakes Carl has made in the relationship. You know, I personally was just very shocked that he couldn't come out and say when she first asked, when they were in like the quiet of their own home, you know, what had transpired. Yeah. And it just shows that he is scared of talking to her. He doesn't know how to communicate, and he's trying to always find the right time. And there's just never a right time. Like, I think he's thinking, oh my God, your bridal shower is tomorrow. I don't want to bring this up before the bridal shower. But then at the same time, then she's going to go back and watch him talk to everyone else about this and not to her. Right. What are your thoughts on the whole thing?
Oh, so many. Yeah, it's interesting because it did in the, like, when the first few episodes, we were all like, oh, we get it, Carl. We get it. Like, she is a disaster. Like, you know, she's being so mean to you. But like you said, as the episodes go on, we're like, oh, maybe you're the problem too. I find the whole him being scared of her thing very interesting because they've been friends for so long and they've communicated. I've seen, because I was watching some like old clips of people just doing like a timeline of their relationship. Like, I've seen like their arguments, and he's very good at like putting his foot down and being like, this is blah, blah, blah. So him being scared is like, but then I also think, A, he's probably more sober during these conversations than he may have been in previous ones.
Oh, for sure.
And I also think that there's a level of him truly caring about her feelings. Like, I think he does love her, and I think it's not so much that he is scared of her, like she's going to do something. I think that he's scared of her in the sense of like, he doesn't want to hurt her. And he doesn't know how to say these things that aren't going to hurt her. And so it makes him stumble and makes him pause. And I think it's what made him not tell her initially until Amanda and Kai were like, well, she's going to see it on camera, so you have to tell her. And then he's like, oh, okay. Because you can see him being like scared during that whole conversation. And she's like, why are you scared? But I think what he's nervous about is that he understands finally the level of her abandonment issues. And so he knows that it's really going to her. Because even the little bit he told her hurt her feelings about his mom. Like, just that little bit. So then to expand on that and be like, they don't think we should get married at all, he probably thinks it's going to be crushing for her and doesn't want to be the person giving that blow to her. So I think, like, that's where his, like, trepidation comes from and being like, But I do also think that, like, it was a little shady of him to have this conversation on camera then. Like, you had to have known sort of what their stance was. You didn't have to do that on camera. You made the choice to do it on camera. And I kind of feel like he's sort of laying the groundwork for wanting to end things without him being the first one to say we should end things.
I don't know that I see it that way, but that's what most people seem to see. I just feel like, how do you know what your family is going to tell you in that moment? They may have, like, danced around it before, but now they're probably like, okay, we really need to be honest with him and have sort of what, you know, people call a come to Jesus talk.
And do you think that was the first time though?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
I think where they were really like, okay, we're only a few months away. You really got to think about this. Because before it was weeks earlier and he came to them upset and they were focused on consoling him. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I don't know that. I think he talks to his mom a lot. I don't know how often he talks to his stepdad on the phone. Mm-hmm. And sometimes certain conversations only lend themselves to in person. And I think you don't always know where a conversation's going to go. Had he given different answers, I think they would have said different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's true. Yeah, no, that's true. I guess I sort of feel like that whole conversation I wouldn't have had on camera anyways, especially if, like I just said, he understands her abandonment issues and understands all of these things. Like, I wouldn't have taken that to my family on camera personally, knowing that that would come back. Because no matter what they said, like, she would still have had to hear those words and those things. That I know that they live, you know, reality, but they also don't have to have everything. It's hard, right? None of us can say what we would do in those situations because there's the ins and outs of it. Some things have to be on camera, some things don't. I do think that by this time, though, he was sort of ready to exit stage left and wasn't really sure how to say it.
So I've known people who, in their gut, they know something's wrong, but they spend their rest of their body and their mind throwing themselves into making it work. And it's not until the gut catches up and, like, their entire body shuts down that they are like, okay, I literally cannot do this. I'm having a physical reaction to moving forward with this relationship, you know, things like that. And so I feel like I don't see him as a master manipulator. I also don't see her as a master manipulator. I think she gets heated and she says mean things. And I don't think he's able to explain to her in a really constructive way what he needs for his sobriety and what he needs from a partner in the sobriety. Like, he made an offhand comment on the after show a few weeks back about how she never went to an Al-Anon meeting.
If
he really wanted her to do that, he needs to vocalize that, right?
Right.
It's unfair to expect your partner to do things that, like, how is she supposed to know, right? Mm. Granted, if it were me, I would, like, look for resources, and it feels like she's not. It feels like she's like, oh, we've got the sobriety thing handled. Let's move forward. And it's like, no, that's not something that just gets handled. That's a lifelong process and journey. And I don't think she knows enough about, like, the sober community and sobriety to provide him the support that he needs. And I think that's what his family is picking up on.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I don't know that he's able to provide her the security that she is looking for because he's too unsure of himself.
Right. Yeah. I feel I agree with that. I agree with that. And I also, I think that he could have done a better job vocalizing, you know, what he needs in terms of sobriety. But I also think, like, that on that side of things is, I don't want to say a fail, but a lack on her end. Because really, like, it is such a serious issue. And she even said at the reunion, which he mentioned of last year, that someone had sent her the resources and the things to do. And she talked about it once and then, like, never again. So it's like, it was available. She just didn't make the choice to engage in it and to learn more. And for something to be that big of a deal and for you to not, you know, want to learn more and see how you can help, I think is a problem. I've always thought that her drinking was going to be an issue. I'm not going to lie. I did a little bit of a I told you so in the group chat about that one because even when they got together, I was like, I love the idea of them together. I love the best friends to falling in love. And when they're good, they're good. I was like, but if he is being sober and she's still drinking and we all know she gets activated when she drinks, like, it's going to be a problem. Like, I don't think, and it's one of those things where you have to be really careful of the words. I don't think that she has a drinking problem, but I think drinking is a problem for her. Like, yeah. I think when she drinks, she gets so angry. She gets, like, she's fun, but she has also all those other things. And when you're with somebody who is sober, like, that's good. Like, the stuff that we saw the first couple episodes, I don't think they ever would have gotten to those points where those things were said if she had been sober. But mm-hmm. she was drinking both times, and she gets angry when she drinks. And it's just, it's not going to work when you have someone, you know, like a Carl who shuts down or who gets upset or who whatever. And I get what she's saying when she's like, well, you only ever want me to be happy and I can't have other emotions. And I don't think it's that he doesn't want her to have other emotions. I think that he cares about her happiness and wants to contribute to her happiness and wants her to be happy. But also, like, can't deal with her when she gets that angry and upset and he can't communicate with her.
The anger part I understand from him saying, like, I can't handle this. But when mm-hmm. she's sad, when she's vulnerable, when she needs reassurance, he's not doing that either.
Right.
And yep, so, like, what he could have done in this week's episode was be like, listen, I really care about you and I want you to know that I love you and I want to move forward with this marriage and this relationship and I have no doubts. And that's what I need you to know. But he also, I don't know, believes that. So, like, he shouldn't say something he doesn't believe. But he's not ever really able to console her. And granted, I think he feels like he's grilled by her a lot of times, like on the, you know, relationship, like on the his career stuff too. You know, and I think.
Which, can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Oh, no, finish your thought.
No, I just think, you know, maybe what she needs to hear is, listen, if we bring a child into this world, I will do everything possible to provide for you and that child. I will take jobs all over the place. Like, I promise you, I'm just trying to figure it out right now. But at the same time, I just don't think her patience has run out. She's like, you need to know what you are going to do. This show is your job right now, but this show isn't going to last forever. And I need you to find something that is just as lucrative.
Which is valid. Like, her whole
thing
about the career is totally valid. And I mean, I've been watching Summer House since the beginning. Our poor man Carl has had job issues since the beginning, like the beginning, with his first job and trying to stick with that. And then with Loverboy, like, and Kyle really has worked with him through that stuff. So I get it. And it's interesting because I think, like, we as viewers at home here, like, you don't have a job, you're not working, but, like, we're forgetting they're making, like, a decent paycheck on the show. And then he even said, like, oh, in endorsement deals, I only got 70 grand. And she got, like, 100 and something. It's like, well, that's 70 grand. Like, that's, like, a portion. Like, that's most people. That's more than what a lot of people make in a year. Yeah. Now, New York is insanely expensive. But it's not like he's not bringing in any income. So I can also understand, especially, like, a lot of us work because we have to. But if we could not and make that amount of money, we would probably chill as well. So I get on some level where his lack of fire is coming from. But like you said, like, if you want those, the show's not going to last forever. If you want kids, if you want those things, like, you're going to have to really, like, buckle down. But he probably feels like, and he kind of, He does and he doesn't. He does and he doesn't have the luxury of taking the time to figure it out, right? Like, it's not like us who, like, oh, if we don't work, we can't pay our bills, we can't do all those things. Like, he doesn't work and he's, I mean, what do you think they make for the show? Like, I have no idea. Like,
I think at this point, maybe like 500,000 a year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. If you put everything together, because like this is now the eighth season. I know on Vanderpump by season 10, like they were, but Vanderpump, I'm not sure if they get paid more because they get more viewers than Summer House.
Yeah.
But I think they get paid a decent amount.
Way more than I thought, which is now I'm even more like I'd be chilling. But like, so like, let's just say though, he's making like 500,000 annually. Plus, like, it's endorsement deals, even if it's only, like, 70. So it's, like, I would be, like, okay, well, I want to work, but I'm not going to force myself to do anything I don't want to because I don't have to. Like, I have the time and luxury to figure it out. But then again, not if you want a wife who wants kids, who wants all of those things. And I feel like that's where he's feeling the pressure because it takes away from that luxury. You actually don't have the luxury, even if you're sitting on that much money, because you have a future to think about. And I think that's what Lindsay's thinking about, and he's like stressed out because he doesn't want to have to be forced into something, but you gotta grow up, unfortunately. Like, if it's just you, yourself, and I, and you don't want to, like, that's totally fine. It's and we see it with the Southern Charm boys. It took them a minute to try to get back into work, and people are like, oh, they're being bums. It's like, well, no, they're making quite a bit on a TV show, so they have the luxury of like not working.
Well, so. And then if you're a chef, you get mailbox money. So
there's that one. Yeah.
I want to pivot to another relationship that is beginning stages, Sierra and West. So we find out this week that they haven't had any sort of conversation about the status of their relationship. She doesn't want to have sex with him until he can tell her how he feels about her, but she has not vocalized this to him exactly. I don't think. And then he's being asked, are you talking to anyone? Are you seeing other? And he's kind of like, well, yeah, I still am talking to people because we're not exclusive. What do you make of, like, what do you think is going to happen?
Their whole situation is very interesting to me. First of all, I think it's weird that so many people think it's wrong that Sierra doesn't want to sleep with him yet. Like, people are like, oh, well, you've been talking like blah, blah, blah. Like, you should have to, like, A, no, she doesn't. Like, we don't owe it to anyone to sleep with them if we don't want to. I think her logic of, like, until you can express to me verbally what you feel, like, I'm not going to be intimate with you. I think that she, from what she's saying and portraying, I think she holds sex to a different standard than a lot of people. I think it's something more, like, intimate and connecting for her than just, like, oh, it's a hookup. I think it's weird that it's such a topic of her being pressured, and I don't necessarily like that, because she should be allowed to be like, I don't want to. Because what if she was like, oh, I don't want to till I get married? I mean, that's a whole different conversation, but like, she's allowed to say like, oh, I don't really want to, and I want to wait. And I don't think that it's weird that she necessarily wants to wait. I think maybe, like you said, she could communicate that portion of it with him more, but I think maybe she also doesn't want him to feel like he can, because you can easily say like, this is what I want to hear, and until I hear this, I'm not getting it. And anyone can say what they want you to hear. So I think that's kind of a hesitancy sometimes, because you want to tell someone what you need, but you also don't want to like give them the blueprint to say what they think you want to hear to get what they want.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that that's part of it. She's waiting for him to get there on his own. I do think the whole thing about him texting and talking to other people, I'm trying so hard with Lindsay, but Lindsay, I feel like, is pulling a Lindsay in this situation, because he literally was like, the door's not really open to other people. Like, I'm talking to them, but we're just like, you know, like, I'm still blah, blah, blah. And I feel like she, when she takes it back, took it back a little bit more, like it was more than what it was. Or at least maybe that's just how I interpret it. Like, from what I interpreted, he's not like a Jesse, right? Like, he's not out there seeking people, dating people, talking to people, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, yeah, if girls talk to me, I talk and blah, blah, blah. But it was kind of taken back as in, like, he's still talking to other girls and still entertaining and still doing all of those things. Which I don't know, maybe we'll see from the clips, and maybe it is more, but from the portion we saw, And the way the conversation that we saw went, it sounded like more just like, I'm not telling girls like, don't talk to me, I've got a woman, but I'm not like,
right,
hey girl, like, let's hook up, you know? So I think it, you know.
Speaking of Jesse, I actually appreciated the little comment at dinner when Sierra said, well, I wouldn't set my friends up with you. I wish they had, I don't know if there was more to that and we didn't get to see it, but I wish she was able to vocalize to him why, because in his confessional, he's like, that hurt my feelings. But I think it's a very valid thing to say, like, you treat sex like it's, you know, you'll have it with anyone. And most of my girlfriends don't feel that way about sex, so it wouldn't be the right match, you know. And I see the way that you treat women. And it's like, if you're not interested, you kind of discard them and you're not thoughtful about their feelings. Like, giving him that feedback would be possibly very beneficial, because I don't know if he views himself that way.
See, I thought she was way harsh. I was like, damn, Sierra. Because I do feel like he said, like, he's just a guy dating or a woman dating. Like, he's not, remember Paige during her dating stage? Like, she, I feel like they're just dating. I don't think that he has really shown, and again, it's hard because we don't see all of it. I don't know that from our end that he's shown that he is leading women on or doing any of the things that I would normally consider like wrong in dating. It sounds like he's just like, hey, we're talking, and if we hook up, we hook up, and if not, you know, whatever. And then I'm like, he sounds like he's just a guy dating, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that, like what you said, like maybe Sierra and her friends value certain things like that, but there's also a lot of women who don't, who are like, right, hey, we went on a date, we had a good time, it worked, it didn't work, moving on to the next. And unless he's telling them something and doing something different, I don't think he's doing anything wrong. So I do think that calling him, like, saying he's trash and you wouldn't hook him up with any of your friends for doing what is literally dating, I thought was really harsh and wrong, because he does seem like he's fairly decent, and from what we've seen.
Yeah, I think all the chatter about him and like things that have been said in the after show and other, it sounds like he's having sex with multiple different women every week. And I think that is something that a number of women wouldn't want in a future partner, because, you know, how are we supposed to date when you're having sex with three other people each week? So like in the course of a month, you know, like,
I feel like it's because he's doing it because he's dating, like,
right,
my view of it would be different if it was like, well, he's talking actively to this person to get a relationship and then also sleeping with all these other women. Like, to me, that's problematic. But if it's just like, I went on a date with someone, it didn't work, and then, oh, it's the weekend, so I'm hooking up with other people, then it's like, well, it's the weekend, do what you want, like, sling that thing around, I don't care.
No, I hear that it was harsh. I think it was harsh, but I wish she explained it, because maybe he's not thinking like, oh, the right girl, you know, but he's also thinking, oh, if the right girl came along, I would immediately know and I would immediately seize all the behavior that I've had. But it just, to me, seems like he's just like treating women as if they're like, he's not considering feelings. But maybe Sierra is taking how she feels about sex and putting that on her friend. So that's actually probably very valid. And
I agree. And I love that you accidentally called her Danielle, because I feel like it's like a Danielle.
Like, it is. Like, he's telling someone.
It's
not nice.
Well, no, not just that, but just like, I feel like he's like a Danielle, where sex is just like, it's fun, it's whatever.
And we've seen that over the years. That's it for Danielle, though. That's the annoying part about Danielle. She acts like it's frivolous, and it's not. And I actually think most people that act like it's frivolous, it's actually not to them. And because their behavior says otherwise. Like, her on Winter House was absolutely insane.
Yeah.
If she was a man doing that to a woman, we would say it was like assault. Straddling him and essentially like coercing him to have sex with her when he verbalized that he did not want to do that is not okay. And, you know, just anyway, so I think with her, she just, for whatever reason, feels like it's okay to judge everyone else, but then can't take any, and this is what Paige said, she can't, people can't dish it back to her. She will shut down.
Right. And she'll say like the exact opposite of like what she just says, because she'll be like, I'm just being honest. And then when someone tries to be honest with her, she's like, well, I don't take that. Like, I'm not accepting that. Like, I don't agree. Whatever. Like, she's solid in herself, but almost like too solid. And I'm always preaching like self-love. I'm always preaching, you know, just because someone thinks you should change something about yourself doesn't mean you have to, all of those good things. But at the same time, like, you have to still acknowledge that what you are, what you bring is not working for other people. And you have to decide if being like that rigid in yourself is worth the friendships. Like, maybe you don't care, and that's fine, but people are still going to feel how they feel. But if you do care, then you have to figure out like, okay, well, how can I soften my tone? How can I approach them in a way that works for them? And it was so interesting to me that she mentioned her being like a CEO and a
founder.
Whatever, because it's like, right. Like a CEO and a founder, because like one of the first things in leadership is learning how to communicate well with your employees, with the people who work with you, and understanding that not everyone communicates the same way and not everyone is motivated by the same thing, and being able to sort of like cater that to the person. So like, don't throw out your leadership role while giving us an example of why you'd be a horrible leader because you can't cater your message in a way that works for the person you're giving it to. Like, whatever she was trying, the example she was trying to make in that situation, I took the exact opposite of it because that was horrible communication.
It was rough. I think one of the problems, and I don't know what's true or what's not true, but if she's drinking so much that she actually doesn't remember the behavior from the night before, then she knows she needs to apologize, but not exactly for what and not how hurtful she was.
Yeah.
And either she remembers and pretends she doesn't, or she doesn't remember. Either way, it's really bad. And I think that she acts in the morning like nothing happened when she has these like tantrums sometimes. I don't know. That's what it felt like on Winterhouse when she was throwing Brian's clothes.
Oh, I can't even with Winterhouse. She was a hot mess in Winterhouse. Like
and then you know, kind of yelling at Paige and being like, it's stupid that Gabby's crying. Like, you know,
that,
I'm going to go.
Was shocked. Yeah.
That was just showing just a lack of just basic care. Mm-hmm. It was clear that some whatever was going on with Gabby was more than just this one thing. Like, it just.
Yeah.
And why not go comfort your friend? Why?
Right. Like, would you not at least just say like, oh, I think part of it is that she had such a burn last season that she's really trying to stay out of the muck this season with like anything and everyone. And so like, I think being presented with someone that she's making upset in her, even in her drunken glazed hazy stage, I think she was like, oh shit, like, man, like, I don't want to be a part of this, like this drama again. Like, I'm sure she's like, part of her went in this season with like, I'm not going to be a part of the drama, a part of the mess, because Summer House was terrible for her last season. And then she made it worse during Winter House. And like, I think this season, we've really seen her back away or not get involved in any of like the confrontations, the arguments. Like, I think it's been very active on her part to do that. So I think like her having that conversation and then finding out the aftermath of it was the exact type of drama she's been trying to stay away from. I think she just ran in the other direction.
Interesting. I actually, that makes a lot of sense too. Like, she's like, wow, people are crying, I'm going to stay away. People are yelling like that. That's not for me. I took it as she was being selfish and very focused on having sex with that balloon guy, and she couldn't be bothered with her friends.
I mean, I think it's both.
Yeah.
But I think if she wasn't trying so hard to stay away from the drama, I think she would have at least been like, hey, what's going on? Like, tried. But I think because she was like, no, she didn't. Like, I think that selfishness of wanting to do the balloon guy and do all of those things were a part of it. But I think she would have at least given an inch, just from the person we've known her to be over the years. I think she would have given like at least an inch of like, hey, are you okay? Or hey, whatever. But she didn't want to touch it at all. And I think that the underlying reason was she's trying really hard to stay out of drama this year.
That's fair. Let's move on to Summer House Martha's Vineyard. I have not had a chance to like get in it with people yet. This season, I guess, because most of my guests haven't watched it, or they did, and I wasn't or I wasn't prepared last week. I didn't take notes on it. And I was like, crap, no, I can't remember because it happened a week ago. So this time I took notes. I am ready. Okay. So the boyfriends and girlfriends of folks in the house come for the weekend. I want to go through these relationships. So thoughts on Preston's boyfriend, Donald?
He seems cool. I mean, I don't have a lot of thoughts, so that's something.
They seem great. Him falling asleep on the couch was so funny. Because would be me. Like, I can't hang. Like, I can't stay up that late. You know, that's just, like, not part of...
Yeah. I think he seems like a good support for Preston, given, like, what he's going through.
Yeah.
And I think that he lets Preston be Preston, which is important. So, like, I like him.
Awesome. I am obsessed with Bria's boyfriend, Simon. He has been my favorite always. And I don't want to make fun of his accent, but it is, if you had to tell me, like, oh, what does a German man sound like, that's what's in my head, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just so German. And his accent, when he's, like, arguing with her, is so funny to me. His getting dressed up for Freaknik was so funny. Like, he is just down to hang. He's up for anything. And he's not, even though I feel like he just doesn't, you would think he wouldn't fit in, right? He's like not from the U.S. He's white. He's, you know, all these things. And he just does not care. And everyone accepts him. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I like her so much with him.
Yes. Yeah. I think we get to see like the fun side of her, which is good. Cause like Preston said, she can be a brat sometimes.
Yep.
But I do enjoy her. I like that he's like down for it. I like that he asks the questions that need to be asked cause he doesn't care. He's just like, he's fun and he's like a breath of fresh air with the summer house crew. You know what I mean? Kind of like you said, like he fits in ways you wouldn't think that he would, but he does. And I love that.
Yeah, he's so fun. Then we've got Amir's girlfriend. I think her name is Natalie. That was sort of the opposite. So I was at a live podcast of the Bravo Bros on Friday night and last night. And Candace was there with Chris. Ooh. And she was giving her thoughts on Summer House, Martha's Vineyard. And she had some thoughts on Amir's girlfriend, but said, we may not be getting the full story. Maybe she doesn't want to be on the show and she doesn't want him to be on the show. And so that's what we're seeing rather than her not wanting to hang out with them. It's like her not being comfortable with the whole camera and all of that. She goes either that or she's just like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's valid. That definitely could be what it is. I wouldn't say that she came across great coming up. I think part of it is that, from what Amir says, her communications skills aren't that great. Because he even said that, like, oh, that's her when she's upset. Like, she won't tell me and I have to figure it out and I have to blah, 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 which is a pet peeve of mine. Like, just use your words. Like, what's going on? What's wrong? So the fact that he's already acknowledged that that's how she communicates is by, like, not communicating and he has to sort of, like, figure it out and do all that. So we already have that. And then I think part of it is that he is so much of a big deal in his head, and I think he's kind of like communicated that to her, like, calm down, Amir, only Jordan, like, there's only a, and it was brief, like, it was a brief thing of Jordan thinking you're hot, but I think, like, he sort of, like, played it up kind of like these women want me, either that or that's sort of what she took away from it, but I think it set the groundwork for her to feel very uncomfortable around them, which kind of makes sense, like, if you think you're around all of these women who, you know, are beautiful and have maybe wanted your man. And now you're feeling like they're going to judge you on everything you say and they're blah, blah, blah. Like, it makes for an uncomfortable situation. I'm really trying to give her grace because I found her really annoying, to be honest, but trying to give her grace and trying to sort of see it like from her viewpoint of like maybe why she might be coming off that way. And I do also think that we tend to think that because people look beautiful or put together that they're confident. And there's a lot of really insecure, unconfident people, no matter how beautiful or talented or successful they are. So it could very much be that she's very insecure, and that's what we're seeing a lot of. And it kind of sounds like that also, just in the way that she interacted with the other women, in the way that she felt that she had to say, like, oh, I make this much and he makes this much. And it feels like she feels like she really has to, like, prove her worth and her value of, like, why she's there, which to me is a sign of insecurity. And I think that that's why she comes off the way she comes off.
That's such a good point, and one I don't think I've thought of in a long time, right? That people can be very physically beautiful, but be incredibly insecure. And that would explain a lot of her behavior. Like, she was, while everyone was starting that party, she was upstairs still doing her makeup for, like, so long. Why?
Yeah, you're right.
No one cares about your makeup, you know? Right. Like, everyone's just there to have a good time. And, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I didn't like her talking about, like, well, the houses I sell are over $2 million, right, and the houses he sells are, like, you know.
Yeah. Lower. To me, that was just all, like, I feel so insecure in this situation. Like, I need them to know that, like, I'm up to snuff with them. Like, I'm good enough. And I'm, like, that's how I read it. And it made me, it was annoying, but also made me a little sad for her internally. Like, girl, yeah, it's okay.
Well, she also put down him, though, in the process. And that's the part that I was like,
true,
why would you do that to your partner in front of his friends?
Yeah, that part.
Well, I really appreciated this Freaknik party because I had never heard of it and I didn't know background. Never.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, I would never have found out about that if not for this show. And that's why I love this show. It's so fun. There's so many, you know, it's a great, like, reality show on its own. Mm-hmm. But there's also this, like, historical stuff that I didn't know about Martha's Vineyard. There's a lot of stuff about, like, conversations happening in the Black community that I'm not privy to, that it's nice to know what's happening and be more aware of some of,
it's
like,
so wild,
you know what I mean?
Like, you didn't. Well, it's so wild, too, that, like, you didn't know. And, like, it's not that we live in two different Americas, but, like, in some ways we really
do.
And I think people forget that.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's certain things. And, like, and it's been interesting for me. And I feel like I'm hyper aware to it because even though, like, I was born in Africa, like, I grew up in a predominantly, like, white neighborhood. I grew up in Canandaigua, New York, upstate New York. So, like, I was always the only Black face around all white faces. So, like, my upbringing was very more white cultured. And so, like, my identification with, like, Black culture and Black community really didn't start until my 20s. So, like, I'm even more aware of, like, the things I know that I didn't know. But it also makes me aware of, like, again, what I didn't know. Therefore, what I know that other white people or other people from other cultures may not necessarily know. So, like, even as I'm like, oh, you didn't know about Freaknik? Well, like, I also didn't learn about it until a couple years ago either. So, it's not, you know what I mean? Or, like...
You're so right about the different Americas. I also feel when I watch Southern Charm, like I'm watching Aliens because I know nothing about Southern culture, you know, especially a lot of like Christian culture. I'm just not as familiar with. And so, for example, I had never heard of a sippancy, never in my whole life. And it was so confusing. I was like, what do you mean? You like... you drink alcohol and look at a baby? Like, what?
Right.
Is this like a celebration once the baby's born? Like, I don't understand, you know? So there's so many things that are these like subcultures in America that different regions, different races, different ethnicities have. And it's really cool to be able to witness it and learn about it, you know?
That's why I love reality TV. Like or TV in general, or at least that's the excuse I give myself, is that, like, I learn so much about other cultures because you're never going to be able to see everything and meet everyone. And I think it's good to remember, though, that there are, because everybody's viewpoints of everything is based on their perception, and your perception is created by the world around you. And if you're only in, like, a certain world in a certain bubble, you also tend to think that everybody thinks that way and feels that way when they are coming from a completely different viewpoint because they have experienced something completely different. But if you forget that, then it's easy to be like combative about things, where, you know, like upset about certain things, when it's most people, there are some a-holes out there. Most people are not like actively malicious. Most people are just viewing and seeing things from their perspectives.
Lens.
And like, if you can remember that their lens is different than yours, it, for me anyways, it lends to a little bit more understanding.
I 100% agree. I think that's the most fun. It's also interesting when you talk about people's like worldview, even just their life experience. Like Summer, I didn't realize, you know, grew up without knowing who her dad was, or think he was one person and then now maybe it's another. And that part of her identity has just never been something she got a chance to explore, and now she's exploring it, and it makes sense that her behavior is off.
Yeah.
And you know, her grandma is sick, and
I'm so glad that she talks about that stuff, because that girl has been a hot mess this summer.
Yes.
I mean, it's been great television, don't get me wrong, but it's like, girl, what's wrong with
what's
you?
What's wrong? Yeah.
But now, and then it's now like, she's, oh, explaining. There actually is something wrong with you, like you're really going through, and I wish she would communicate that a little bit more
to the others, because she's doing
it.
I don't know if she was able to in the while it was happening, but in the months after, when they're doing confessionals, she seems to have put the pieces together and explained, oh, that's why I was behaving this way, because this other thing happened. And so that's really interesting.
But that again, I feel like lends to like everybody sort of going through things that you may not always notice, and like, that's why, especially when someone's acting a little bit off from things, like I pause to figure out like why, you know? And even like going back to Danielle, like it took me a minute to really be like, wow, maybe this is who she is, because like last season I was like, well, she's going through the breakup. Like this isn't the Danielle we've known of previous seasons. So like her actions are probably part of this. And like when people are going through stuff, it changes how they act. And so I try to give them a little more grace. But with her, we're like on season three, and I'm like, girl, this is maybe just you, and we need to reconcile with the fact that you are a know-it-all. But but like with Summer, it's interesting. I do think part of it is just her, though, especially given what the others have said about other interactions with her. But I do think that like the stress of everything that she's going through maybe has removed a filter that she may have had in the past.
It's interesting to watch people's coping mechanisms in real time. Mm-hmm. That's what I find so fascinating. Like when they're put under pressure and something else is going on, how do they lash out? We watch Kristen on The Valley. When she feels backed into a corner, she scrapes her way out, messing up things that she's saying, throwing stuff out there, slinging mud. Yeah. Summer just gets angry and very volatile. And people are like, oh, seems out of nowhere.
And very graphic about her sex life.
Yeah.
Like the things she said, I'm like, why would you say it like that?
She's something else. I do feel like she's jealous of her friend Noelle for having such an easy time getting along with everyone and enjoying herself. I do feel like she's like, that's what I want to have this summer, and I'm not. And she feels like left out, but she's not putting herself in those scenarios. Like I feel like Shanice, Bria, and Noelle would just hang out with anyone that walked in, right?
Yeah.
They're just having a good time. They're laughing, they're making each other laugh. Like Shanice, I've said that she's the kind of person that, sorry, can you hear my dog?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, hold on. Shanice is the kind of person I've said that, like, if I saw her at a party, I would stay far away, because she makes me scared, because she's like so willing to do anything.
Yeah.
But on TV, it is so funny. She is such comedic relief. Like her hobbling
like
around.
Her eating her wings while they're fighting.
That was so good. Her like trying to get down the stairs with her ankle, her like falling with the ankle, all of it is just, and she's just doesn't want to stop the party. So she's like, oh, I'm gonna go horseback riding even though I can't walk. I'm gonna do like just like,
yeah. I do have to say one thing about Summer in her, even though I think she's a little bit of a mess, I feel, and maybe this is more me self-projecting onto her, I do think that, like, sometimes people get put in, like, the good girl, nice girl bubble, and you feel, like, locked in to be a certain person, and then you feel like you're not given the grace to have other ranges of emotions without it being judged harsher than someone else when they do or have the same thing. So, like, and I felt this, and actually it took me having like a serious conversation with my sister about it, because I would be like, listen, you can have tantrums all the time, and we're all like, oh, well, it's okay. Like, you know, she had that moment, and now we've moved on. And I feel like, but when I have one and I have a moment, it's like this huge deal, and I feel like really judged and really blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, no, that's actually just more how you are internalizing the fact that you had that moment. when you have a moment, we feel about the same way you feel about my moment. Like, she had a moment and now we're moving on. And so I feel like with Summer, and especially like with Jordan, she's like, you get to have all these anger moments and everybody's like, that's just how you are. But when I have it, it's this huge deal because I'm not supposed to have that range. I'm not supposed to be that person.
So that is such a good segue to Vanderpump Rules. I know you haven't been watching, but you've seen the clips. And the clip that I think was most important this week was the conversation that happened between Brock and Ariana when he's asking her to give a little bit, forgive a little bit, so it'll be easier on his wife, Sheena. And she's talking about male rage and female rage. That was so powerful, I thought, when she's basically saying, I don't have to forgive him to move forward in my life, and I don't have to give him anything. And I'm, and then she talks in her confessional about gray rocking, which I had never heard of before. I know you're a mental health advocate. Is this something that you've come across in the past as a way to deal with someone who's narcissistic and abusive?
Gray rocking? I haven't heard the phrase.
Gray. So she basically is like, you give them nothing more than a gray rock would. So when they're talking to you, you don't make eye contact. You like, yes, no, maybe, sure, you don't like give them anything that they could then use. You kind of take all emotion out of it. Yeah. And that's what her goal is for engaging with Sandoval. She doesn't want to give him anything, because then he uses her emotion as power and throws it back at her.
No, and it makes a lot of sense. I think that I, like you mentioned, I'm a mental health advocate. So part of me loves that we are all talking about mental health and mental illness and all those things more. Part of me absolutely loathes it because everybody is diagnosing everybody with everything and everyone's calling everybody. Like, every time someone's selfish now, they're a narcissist. Every time someone lies now, they're gaslighting. Like, no, that's not how it works. But Tom definitely shows actual signs of being an actual narcissist. And I think people forget, like, narcissism isn't just someone who's selfish. It's like an actual personality disorder where they truly never see anything wrong with anything they do. Like, not that they don't want to. They literally do not and cannot see anything wrong with what they do. And they are extremely manipulative. And he does give off those signs. So her not wanting to give him anything in those interactions is exactly how you should deal with it, because she's right. He would use any little bit against her, and he's good at manipulating it with other people. And when he cries and when he does all those things and when he's like not acknowledging his part in stuff, part of it is because he truly doesn't see it. Like, that's the disorder, right? Like, that's why it's a disorder. It's because you don't see it. Whereas a logical mind might see it and say, I'm still going to lie about it, or I'm still going to like avoid it. In his mind, he's like, I don't see why I am a problem. Like, I don't get it. That's why narcissists are so frustrating to deal with. So her not giving him anything, I think, is great. And then what she said to Brock is completely correct. She's allowed to have anger. She's allowed to be upset. And this whole, like, we have to instantly forgive and we have to like move on. And I get that it's a little bit different because they're all filming a show. So like in real life, you really could just cut him off and be like, I don't want to deal with him. But you're in this situation that's harder because you have to keep dealing with him. But it does make me upset, even in like the comments section of things, like people being upset with her for not moving on or for not giving him more grace and blah, blah, blah. Like, A, let's talk about how close this was to when all of this happened. She hasn't even had a full year to like deal with her feelings or her emotions before being thrown right back in. And then be like, she's allowed to be upset. Like, why do we always have to be like docile and like, oh, it's okay, like boys will be boys, or that's just a guy? And I think part of it is because like, and it drives me crazy, like there's this underlying acceptance of a level of awfulness about like men and guys that is built into the misogyny like world that then makes it easy for us to forgive them for doing things. Like, it drives me wild and it makes my brain feel like it's going to short circuit, because it's like, at one hand, we live in a society where we're supposed to like, men are the best and men are the greatest and they're the leaders and they're the people who are on top of everything and can do everything. But at the same time, we're also like, oh, they did this bad thing, well, boys will be boys, or that's just how men are. Like, how are we holding them to the standard of being like the best, but then also holding them to no standard because we're forgiving everything awful that they do? I feel like it should be one or the other. If we're going to say they're the best, then we should hold them to the standard of being the best. And then if we're going to say they're the worst, then maybe we shouldn't say they should be in charge of everything. Like,
right?
How are we doing both? You know?
Yes. So. No, it's 100%. Like, and I think the way Sheena has been describing it is that she has a lot of difficulty with the emotion anger. And I relate to that because I have difficulty with it too. I don't like feeling it, and I don't know how to manage the feeling of it. It's not something I know how to process well. And so for her, she's basically like, I have to get to a place of forgiveness because this anger is eating me up and it's making me, you know, problems in my life, right?
Yeah.
But she's assuming that Ariana has that same experience with the emotion of anger. And I think Ariana is like fine being angry. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she's like, I can be angry and I can, you know, open a sandwich shop and be on Broadway and have a new boyfriend and I can still have that anger for him. Whereas Sheena basically can't. And so I think she's like, we don't want you to hold on to it because it's like eating you up inside. But I don't think it's eating Ariana up inside. And so they're just projecting, I think, her and maybe Lala. But Lala has no leg to stand on because she's never forgiven Randall. So and she says it's like so much worse because they have a kid. Yeah, I agree. Like, because now this is impacting a young child. But, you know, you don't really get to tell people like who they should date, how soon after they should have a boyfriend or not, you know, all these things. And it's been rough watching her act so nice to Ariana's face. And then in the confessionals, and then even more so in her Amazon lives and on podcasts, just being really, really nasty to Ariana.
Yeah. And it's really unfortunate. And I have to say that, like, I'm on the Sheena side of things with the anger too. Like, I don't like it. And I always say, like, whatever I can do to keep my North Star pointed at peace is what I'll do. And what I'll say to myself, like, if I have to convince myself that, like, that bad thing, like that annoying thing that just happened was because of, like, whatever backstory, like, I'm fine with that because I don't like the anger and I don't like being upset and I need the peace. But I also, like, I'm not going to tell someone else that they're not allowed to be angry, and I'm not going to tell someone else that they have to find peace in the situation. And even in one where, like, I want the peace, like, if you've upset me, I will distance myself from you. Like, I'm not going to pretend everything's okay just to not have the anger. Like, if you did something wrong, you did something wrong. The difference is that, like, I'm not going to associate with, like, I'm not going to bring myself in that situation where you have to interact. Like, so I do think the way Sheena deals with Sandoval, especially the things he says to her and the way he treats her, like, I understand wanting peace, but also don't let someone treat you so horribly and say, like, that's my friend when that's not your friend.
And you that's, know? I think, what where Ariana is coming from. But I bet she also was treated poorly by Sandoval in their relationship, and she was okay with it for however many years.
Right.
So, like, you know, you're telling Sheena to hold a grudge and to not hold a grudge, to see him for who he is, but you didn't see him for who he was.
Right. And had he not cheated, because that's the other thing too, is I feel like people kind of forget, and I, you know, I'm so team Ariana in all of this and I'm so happy for her, but, like, let's not forget that, like, Sandoval has also been Sandoval, and she's also been okay with him being Sandoval for a long time until the cheating happened. So he didn't also just become this person. And, you know, like you said, sometimes it takes a while for your gut to catch up with everything else. But, like, for the most part, she also, for a long period of time, was, like, okay accepting that behavior.
Yep.
And so it's also understandable that other people are kind of okay accepting that behavior because they are in the same boat, too. I do think that probably with Sheena, though, she's would think that their friendship that they had, would be held at a higher value than the friendship Sheena had with Sandoval. And so I think that that's probably a level of, like, hurtful and being, like, wanting her to distance herself from it more, which I totally get. I'm one of those people. I think that people always are like, oh, you shouldn't pick sides. And I'm not about that life. Like, I feel like
I love that, Namade. Oh, my God.
I feel like, yes, in a situation where like you're just casual friends, whatever, I can understand that. But I think if someone is truly your friend, or more importantly, a spouse, I don't understand how you cannot pick sides, because it should hurt you that someone is hurting your friend. So like, I don't know if you're married to, like, married to medicine, but
all the way except this last season.
Okay. Well, Jackie and Dr. Simone had this friendship, and then Heavenly yep. came in, and Heavenly's been awful. But like, the point is that like, Simone is really upset that Jackie is friends with Heavenly. And like, I get it, because when someone is really your friend, even if that person isn't picking a fight with you, I feel like you're hurting my friend. So I can't be your friend. And it blows my mind when people have it with spouses. Like when someone's like, oh, yes, this person is mean to my spouse, but they're fine to me, so I don't have a problem with them. Like, you should have a problem with them. Like, if you love me, you should have a problem with the fact that they are upsetting me. Like, I'm not saying you have to like go out of your way to be awful with them, but you shouldn't be cool like just hanging out with them and just doing all these things knowing that person hurt me. So I can understand if like Ariana sees her and Sheena's having like this best friend relationship, that it would upset her that she's okay being cool with Tom, because yeah. I just feel like in close friendships, it's not even like wanting to be like picky and annoying. It's like, you shouldn't be able to, you know? So I kind of get that. And I, like you said, like the Lala of it all, she's been a real disappointment this summer, like a real, and I'm one of those people, I've been a Lala apologist for years, but like, I can't even with anything about her this season, because it's just, I don't know if it's jealousy. I think that's part of it. I think she had her awful cheating thing, and so she doesn't get why this one's even bigger, and why Ariana's getting all these opportunities. But I think that part of it is because, the way it all happened, right? Like, all of us watching in real time the lies and the things going down. B, Randall wasn't shit before, so none of us were really surprised when it happened. And like, as much as we don't love Sandoval, or I've never liked him, he still wasn't at the level of Randall of it all. So like, when it happened, like, yes, people were like, oh, poor Lala, but also like, duh, girl, you know? And then also, I think people forget that part of the reason why Ariana is getting all these opportunities is because there's a level of talent. I think we see people in reality things and think like, oh, that's all they're good for. Like, she has a major in like theater and communications. Like, of course she's then able to do all these things when the opportunity comes. One of my favorite quotes is, luck is when opportunity meets preparation.
I believe, and the girl's that's been from prepared. Oprah, right?
Yeah. I mean, the girl's been prepared. So now she's having all these opportunities come, and she's able to take them up. And that's not her fault. Like, sorry to Sheena and Lala for being jealous. It's unfortunate that they are using this platform where they could have risen up with her, right? Like, they could have done girl power, and instead yep. they're doing hater, and that's making them look bad, which they'll turn around and make her fault also, I'm sure, but it's on them.
It is on them. Well, let's get to the valley, because what you said about, you know, marriages and your spouse, and if someone is nasty to your spouse or they're nasty to you, your spouse, this is something that I've been thinking about for a while with Jax and Brittany. Brittany mm-hmm. wants to keep all of her friendships, even though her husband messes with them, right? Mm-hmm. He can be really mean to her friends, and he has lost her friends, especially with Stassi and Bo. They are no longer friends. Stassi set a boundary. She's like, you wronged me one too many times. I'll be cordial, but we're not friends. And I just think Brittany's having trouble accepting that was because of her being a Jax apologist, right? Mm. She's constantly, and that's part of what it means. She chose Jax, and she chose that marriage over a lot of other things. And now it's coming back to bite her in the ass. And I do feel sorry for her. I feel like, you know, she doesn't deserve poor treatment, but she also really knew what she was getting into with him. And specifically that recording from season 6. So he not only cheated on her, but he told, you know, Faith that he didn't find her physically attractive, that he didn't want to marry her, have kids with her, like really nasty stuff. You got into his psyche, and you still chose to move forward. And so now I think she's having to deal with all of this. And it was sad to watch their date night and how not in tune they are. But I found myself for the first time agreeing with Jax. And granted,
yeah,
the way that he brought it up, I bet since it was on camera and he had never said it to her before, she felt like he was springing something on her about not having a second kid yet. Mm-hmm. But she was so focused on like, but we decided that I don't think she was listening to what he was saying. And what he was saying did make a lot of sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. we need to make sure we're good before we bring in another kid. If we bring in another kid and we're not good, it's only going to make it worse.
Right. I mean, logically, I'm with you. I agreed with him in that conversation. I thought what he made valid points. But I do think that, you know, sort of like you said, like she, like Jax has been Jax, like that whole, like people will show you who they are. Like he's always shown who he was and she's picked to be with him. I mean, even like when we were talking about the whole Ariana and Tom thing, like Tom has been Tom for years and she stayed with him. And I think that part of it is like a level of growing up. I think you sort of grow up and you see things differently. And I think also, you know, like you, just your goals maybe changing, or you expect like your partner's going to grow and they don't always grow at the same time. But just acknowledging the fact that like he's been Jax for a while and she's been an apologist of Jax for a while.
Yeah.
And I mean, you should be, right? Like just because we think he's good. Everybody, and I say this, everybody, there's someone for everyone out there. And everybody will find someone who is into them for who they are, even if a bunch of people don't like that about you. So be yourself. Don't worry about changing. Worry about finding someone who can accept you. And for a while, that was Jax and Brittany. Like, he was Jax. And we were all like, you're the worst. But Brittany was like, I love him. So it worked for them for a while. And unfortunately, though, now she's growing up. And the blinders are coming off and she's growing and changing and he may be not growing and changing in the same way. And so it is changing the course of their relationship. But like you said, like she knew who he was and she was accepting of who he was, which is how you should be. Don't be with someone who you want to change constantly. Even if they do stuff that like annoys you, like, you know, in the beginning we were talking about Paige and Craig, like in Winter House, I think it was Winter House, right? He was having like that meltdown for a while.
Oh my God, he was awful
then. He's so awful. And she just sat patiently and let him like work his way through it. And then they talked about it after. Like, that's sort of what you should want in a partner. Like, there is a level of holding your partner accountable. And I will say, like, as much as we are also like, well, Ariana knew with Tom, she would check him sometimes when he was being too much. So there is a level of wanting your partner to exhibit better qualities and traits and things. But then there's also a level of like accepting who they are, even when there are not great qualities and traits, because you don't want to be with someone who wants you to change constantly and be different than who you are. So it's a hard line to walk. And I think Brittany has tried that with Jax, because she has also, as much as she accepts him, she's also been aware and acknowledging of his awfulness. But I do think she... which isn't something I hate. I do think, like, when it comes to the outside world, she tries to present a united front. And I think that's how it should be in a relationship, honestly. Like, I think maybe behind closed doors, I'm going to be like, you're a jackass.
Yeah.
But out in public, like, I'm not going to let you talk about him. I'm going to be like, that may not have been the best route, but blah, blah, blah. Like, stand by your man, girl. And even though it's annoying to watch, I think that's the right way to be in a relationship and be supportive. But... yeah, it is going to cost you friendships sometimes if you're choosing your spouse.
That's sort of my point. It's like you can't get upset at losing these friendships and think it's other people's fault because of the choices you made.
Yep.
What do you think of Michelle and Jesse's crumbling of their marriage? I actually felt for him. Which made me mad, especially when he was talking about like how he was really in it for better or for worse. But I don't, that there's a whole thing with that about like, well, then you can act however you want. That's not cool. But when he said that her behavior changed, like it used to be that she would make sure that the phone was always up when they would be somewhere, so that it was like transparency. And then she started putting her phone down where you couldn't see the screen. And she used to post pictures every time she went out with her girlfriends. And then sometimes she wouldn't be posting pictures. So he's like, "What? Were you really with your girlfriends? I don't know." So he does have doubts in his head and he doesn't want them to come out on camera. Now, what I feel like everyone breezed by in this episode is the fact that he was physically violent with multiple people in the hallway. I do think my reasoning is that most of them couldn't see what was going on in the hallway. But for those that were in the hallway, like Brittany, Zach, Chris, like all of them, it's a big problem that he like went for Kristen and just like bulldozed Brittany and anyone else that was in his way. That I feel like everyone's like, eh, they're like shrugging. I'm like, this is like a major altercation. You can't do that.
Yep. I agree. The Jesse and Michelle of it all. First of all, like I said, I'm annoyed that he made like the way it happened. This episode made me feel bad for him because I generally like find him so annoying and obnoxious. But I do also think that, well, first of all, neither of them are saints. I think that there's some issues on her end too, and she's not looking so great in this. But I think we're also seeing a woman at the end of her ropes who's fed up. And I think that he, like, it's great that he's having this come to Jesus. I want to fix things. I don't want to make things better. It's our first season with them, but this has probably been going on for a while with them. And so it's so easy now that you've done all the damage to be like upset at the aftermath of it. I don't think cheating is the way to fix anything ever. So I don't think she's handling it right. And if, even if it was vice versa, like that's not the way to handle it. But I do, and I can understand if he's been the person that we've seen him be in just a few episodes that we've seen, if he's been that person for however long they've been together, I'm sure she's sick of it too. And she's over it too. And if she's tried to communicate with him, communicate to him, like what she needs, how she feels, and he's not getting it, then like, she's over it. Even like the complimenting thing, like that session they had with the with their coach, and he's like, "Well, why would I say this? Because it's just going to do this." And she's like, "Well, I want you to mean it." And then he just—it seems like he doesn't really get it and hasn't really gotten it. And she's over it. And now he's like, "Oh crap, she's about to leave. Let me change my behaviors and let me like really show that I want to make it work." But it's like you should have been showing that you wanted to make it work. And you can't just throw in a Hail Mary at the end. And now it's all my fault because I'm not accepting of what I know is you just doing damage control. It's not that you've changed. It's not that you want to be this better person. You are doing damage control so that I don't leave. And then because remember, he said that she had gotten to this point before where she was going to leave. And then he stopped it and they, you know, were able to sort of come back, which tells me that he probably has done this damage control routine and she bought it last time and she stayed, and then after a while he probably reverted back to how he was, and now he's on damage control round two and she's like, "I've done this rodeo before, I'm not doing it again." And so I think like that's what we're witnessing. But because she's allegedly cheated, it makes it all seem like a moot point. Like, and that's the way he's probably going to go with it, is like, "You were doing all these things when we had problems," which is true, because again, even with the Tom and Ariana, having problems doesn't excuse cheating. So in this situation, while I can get why she's over it, why she's not doing this again, cheating's not the way to go. And so it sort of makes it all just seem, it makes her seem worse, because women, especially if the woman's the cheater, will always get harshly blamed more than the guy. And people will watch it and be like, "He's trying to save their marriage and she's having an affair and blah, blah, blah." And they won't see the, she's been through this before and it's over it. So it's unfortunate.
Forget Dr. Heavenly. I mean, you're the real relationship expert.
Thank you. Those who can't do, teach.
I love that. The final thing on the Valley is talking about, you know, Kristen.
And Luke, so, can we talk about Luke too?
Yes. So particularly like everyone's response to Kristen, like the idea that she caused all the problems and so we need to have space from her and she shouldn't be at our events and we're not going to come to places that she's at. And then the bowling scene where Jason and Jack sat down Luke and are like, you need to talk some sense into her because she is taking information and she's mixing up the words and she's spitting it out and it's very hurtful. And she's saying things that aren't true. I feel like that's definitely the case, but she's also sort of being the scapegoat when she's saying she's like, things are going on and no one's talking about it. And like, she did this and he did that. Now, the thing that annoys me about her, she's like, she's very like Gretchen Wieners. She's like, cause I'm such a good friend. And you're like, you literally are not a good friend. You're not sharing everyone's business. Exactly. Stop it. Like, don't act like you're some martyr. Okay. But what did you make of that conversation where Luke was sort of trying to say, you need to take some accountability for your behavior?
So I thought that conversation was good. It's kind of like what I was talking about before, where like, you accept your person, but you're also behind closed doors allowed to be like, listen, babe, like we got to fix this. So I thought that that's exactly how it sort of should have went. Mm-hmm. He accepts her for who she is and he's not trying to make her different, but he's also trying to help her improve in ways that she kind of needs it a little bit. So I thought that that was really good. Her whole, like, I'm an empath thing.
Oh my God. That is hilarious too.
and it's so funny because like, throwing out that somebody has a secret but not saying it is almost as bad as saying it because you're just lighting this fire for everybody to go on an expedition. A true friend doesn't say, I'm protecting you and by not telling your secret. A true friend doesn't say anything. That's how you protect someone. You don't tell everybody that there's a secret that needs protecting, you know? And I think that she, like you said before, gets in a state of panic and then like wants to throw out stuff to deflect to whatever from her, and it causes all these problems. Kristen has always been a problem for me since the Valley.
Vanderpump Rules?
Vanderpump,
era? Got it. Okay.
Vanderpump Rules there. And it's so funny because I was talking to like my friends and I was watching this. I was like, you know, Kristen's always been an issue for me, but like, because she did apologize for like what she had said. And I was like, I feel like she's having growth. Like, okay, like maybe she's grown and changed. And then like, by the end of the episode, I was like, I take it all back. She's still Kristen. Kristen's still Kristen. Because she's like, there, I said it. It's like, you don't have to be that person. And it's just like, whenever she feels backed up, she lashes out with whatever she can say. And while, yes, she's grown in the sense that now she'll come back and apologize, but that doesn't change the damage that she's done and what she said. But, you know, even like you said, she is being a scapegoat in some of these situations. Because it's stuff with Zach. Zach even admitted to her, yes, I really had this conversation, but won't admit to everybody else. So then everyone still thinks she's lying when she's like, I'm not lying. I'm saying what he said. But because he won't acknowledge it, she's still getting the blame for it. And nobody wants to hear her apologies. And I think part of it is because they also know what they've said and that she will, with all the quickness, say whatever she needs to do to protect themselves, which makes them vulnerable if they've said anything to her that could potentially come back and be bad.
You can't trust her. At the same time, no. I don't think she was being a great friend to Michelle by just like keeping a secret. She could say, listen.
But she didn't though. That's the thing that she told everybody she had a secret.
The year or whatever. Like you could tell your friend, listen, I don't know if this is the best thing for you. I think you should probably try and figure out whether or not things are going to work with Jesse and be in a clear headspace for that. And then you can move on, you know?
Right.
Like, I don't know if this is the best thing for you, but again, people, you know, we should all have a graveyard in which to bury the faults of our friends.
Right. And I mean, and she may have been having those conversations behind closed doors.
Encouraged it. That was the thing. After show, she was like, well, he was being such a dick. So I was like, yeah, go get it. You know?
Oh, yeah, no.
And
no,
I'm like, oh, Chris, that's not helping her, you know? Right. Like, I understand the sentiment, but I don't know that that's getting her to where she needs to be.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree.
but again, you know, to each his own. People have different
thoughts
and feelings about how to handle issues in relationships and marriages and what's okay and what's not okay. you know, everyone has their own different sort of moral compass. And
yep.
I don't think anyone's is better or worse than the others. It's just more important that yours are aligned.
Yes. Can I get your thoughts really quick on Luke? Because I keep going back. Part of me is like, I think he's great. Like, I think he is one. I love how he has her back, especially like around other people. But then it also seems like he's not oblivious to who she is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I like him and people are like, no. But
I don't think there's anything wrong with Luke. I don't like, he's a little weird, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like you live in this part of Colorado that just got running water and electricity, and you seem to really want to be one with nature. And yet yeah. you are in love with this woman who doesn't want to leave Los Angeles, who's on TV and who couldn't be farther away from this like nature.
Right.
Like
how did this even happen? She must really put it down at that wedding where they met.
Yeah, right. I think he's like really into her, mm-hmm. and the idea that he wants to have a baby with her and, you know, all these different things. Yeah, it's just there's a lot.
It also makes me wonder what she's like off camera, only because he even is like being around these people and all of these things, like it's taking you away from like the chill person you are and blah, blah, blah. And it makes me wonder if like part of what we see is a mix of like anxiety with the cameras and all those stuff, and also B, playing it up for the paycheck. Because, you know, because sometimes you see someone on camera, you're like, how does that even work? But then like the way that he says stuff makes me feel like maybe when all this stuff isn't around, maybe she's just more chill and more fun. And like their relationship works when there's no cameras.
I think she is more chill and more fun. And that's the part that he likes about her. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, the idea that he's made the decision that he wants to have a child with her, they did get pregnant. And she unfortunately lost the baby. And that was all going on, I think, in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I guess her and Lala had some sort of fallout and her anyway. So
do you think Lala's going to end up on the Valley?
I have no idea what the future is between Vanderpump and the Valley. I like that they've created basically two shows. And so you kind of want to watch both. And they've made this after show be kind of a little bit of both of them.
Mm.
I think the issue with Vanderpump is they just need some time and space and to figure out how to move forward. The main problem with Vanderpump now. Okay. What I think is the issue is that Vanderpump worked when they were all real friends, and there mm-hmm. has been so many changes, and now they are not a cohesive group of friends. It's a manufactured group of friends, and that's not yeah. as enjoyable to watch as a true group of friends, which is now the Valley. Like these are yeah. people that actually hang out together. Their kids are together. You know, they seem to spend time around one another. Lala and Sheena hang out, but they don't hang out with James and Allie that much. No one hangs out with Ariana and Katie. Tom and Tom hang out, but like it just feels a little disjointed. So I think taking the summer to have a break is mm-hmm. really smart to see if we can get to a place where we don't all hate each other and where we'll actually hang out. But I don't know. It's really tough. I've always wanted to see more of Ariana's real life because she has all these friends outside of the show and we don't get to see that.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't know. We shall see. We shall see.
I honestly would be okay with Vanderpump going away. You can move over Sheena and not that I need them on my cameras. I would be fine with them going away also, but I would be open to Sheena and Lala moving over to the Valley. And then I would love to see a show about Katie and Ariana. Like, I want to see, like have a There's Something About Her show where we get to see, like, the sandwich shop and get to see their real friends and get to see them do, like, their girl power positivity stuff. Like, it doesn't always have to be, like, drama and negativity, and it can be fun. And I feel like watching those two just, like, kick ass at life and, like, figure themselves out would be, like, just a fun 30-minute show to watch. And it would be a good, like, opposite of the drama and hot mess of the Valley.
Yeah, but they're not going to get rid of Tom and Tom. Those are moneymakers for Bravo. They they live such an unusual life that it's like hard to look away from. It's like, oh my gosh.
Don't you think people are kind of over it now, though? You don't think?
I still find it interesting that after all these years, they want to now move back in together and revert back into their 20s. And
that's it's true.
Fascinating. That's like, it's true. Really interesting to me. Yeah. I'm like, what's going on? Are they trying to redo their 20s now, both dating women who are very young and trying to like make up for the mistakes that they had made in the last couple of decades and do it over? Yeah. Or are they trying to be eternally youthful? Like, I don't know.
So give them their own show, right? So here's
we're
my
gonna have like a Marvel situation.
My producer hat is that Tom and Tom should have a show called Midlife Crisis, and then Ariana and Katie should have a show called There's Something About Her. Like, give them each like a half hour show, and have that be a thing.
And then the Valley be like the bigger, like James and Allie. Because I will watch James Kennedy always, no matter how problematic he is. He is so funny.
Yeah, that's why it won't go away, is because they actually, like, even as I'm like split them up, it's like, oh, but I do want to still see James because they're funny. But he can be with the girls.
He has been all season. He's been, him and Katie have been like the only solid friends of Ariana. Like, not going back and forth. He's around Sandoval, and he's still not giving in to Sandoval's narrative or anything like that. Like, he's just done a remarkable job of having clarity in this situation and knowing, like, how to behave. I'm shocked at how calm he's been.
Yeah, he's been, like, a trooper. And years ago, if he had told me that he'd be one of my faves, I would have been like, you are lying. But I feel like he is showing growth, and I think that getting older doesn't always come with growth, as we can see from the Toms. But with James, you actually see him getting older and having growth. Like, he's actually matured over the years, and we've been able to watch it, which is nice.
It is nice. Well, thank you so much, Namade, for being on and giving us all your wonderful sage advice. I really think you could be a relationship counselor. I swear. Tell everyone where they can find you, anything you want to plug. You have so much going on. Share it.
I do. Thank you so much. Well, thank you for having me. I love talking, you know, Vanderpump, reality TV, especially Summer House. So anytime I can talk Bravo. I love it, which is actually, this is a perfect segue to, I used to have my series, Bold Black and Addicted to Bravo. I've done a little bit of a revamp. It's called Bold Black and Binging, because I like reality shows from all the channels, right? Like, I love, like, my Love and Hip Hop. I love Love and Marriage. Love and Marriage Huntsville is about to come back. It's a hot mess. I cannot wait. So I want to talk about more reality TV shows. And, you know, in my series, I talk about life stuff, but like through the lens of reality TV shows, because it kind of gives us that neutral platform of having examples of those things. So I'm getting ready to bring it back for season 3. I'm actually, after we do this, I'm going to work on the schedule for recording. So please, if you are out there, you can find me. I'm mostly on Instagram. I live on Instagram, that African butterfly, but I'm also on TikTok, where I obsessively talk about my love of Korean dramas.
Oh my God, I love that.
I'm obsessed. It's a problem. It is a problem, but I love them. And I'm on Threads, that African butterfly, and then also on YouTube. That's where my series is. You can see past episodes. Mandy's been on a few that have been great, so you can check it out. And yeah, it's that African butterfly. That's where you can find me everywhere.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll definitely have to have you back. You really have a great way of like looking at things from many different angles. And I appreciate that, because that's what my show is about. It's all about the nuance, multiple truths, you know, and learning, right? And giving people space to learn. And
yeah, I love our chats. Yeah. So thank you for having me.
We'll talk soon.